When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sports Yak.
Oh,
one host knows sports.
And who's right there?
The other doesn't know sports, but somehow they meet in the middle. Corey Mann.
Get your big butt out of here!
And Indiana Sports Broadcast Hall of Famer.
This one will be relived.
Chuck Freebie.
Forever.
Do you like sports? Because we like sports. Let's talk about sports. It's Sports Yak. Sports Yak. It's Sports Yak.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that feels like it was just 100 episodes old a week ago, it's SIFPOP. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live. Most weekends are available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get those perks!
This is Sparta!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and I looked into his eyes and saw honor. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome.
Oh, that's not true. Each week, you saw mischievousness.
Well, you know, listen. Each week we'll chat about movies, television, whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. He'd never forget which movie Marlon Brando and Jack Nicholson were in. It's Ian Whittington, ladies and gentlemen.
Apart from he absolutely would. And that was bugging me the entire movie. I was like, now... They're making fun of this, but it's genuinely bugging me, and I may kill the person next to me.
It's the Missouri Break.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that's, the name of the movie.
That's Missouri
Break.
It's not a good movie. I'll just tell you that right now.
Okay, good. I don't feel bad.
I don't think I've ever seen it. We are, of course, talking about...
It's a Western.
Well, then I probably wouldn't like it either. We're, of course, talking about some stuff from old. We are going to review that today, M. Night's new movie. I will tell you, we went over his filmography and kind of ranked it, the three of us, for our members show, for the SIFPOP members. So if you are a SIFPOP member, that should be waiting for you in your ad-free, member-only podcast feed.
That is obviously excluding old.
That is correct. We did not put old in there because we wanted to save that for this review. We're also going to talk about Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins, bringing us a Snake Eyes movie. Both of those, I think, exclusively in theaters. This may be the first time post-pandemic or during pandemic even that we've had both of our reviews exclusive theater releases.
What about Tenet? Wasn't Tenet exclusive theater?
It was.
I think we paired it with something else.
We paired it with something else that was streaming. That's the thing. We've had other movies that have been exclusively in theaters, but I don't think we've ever had both of the movies we're reviewing.
What a weird thing for that to be new. That's odd.
It is odd. Well, we're excited to get into it. Welcome back, Ian. Thanks for joining us again. You know, I will say before we get into it, you were not able to see Snake Eyes because...
No, thank goodness.
You...
I mean, yeah, no, it's because...
You don't know that. You don't know that. You haven't heard our review yet. Don't you know? You're supposed to wait until SIFPOP reviews it, and then you know whether or not you're
then
happy.
That's when I know if I'm allowed to like it or not.
Right, cool. Yes, exactly. This is simply because it is not playing. In your neck of the woods.
Unfortunately not. A few days, I think it's literally out in a few days' time, but I've seen one of the G.I. Joe films more than enough times to excuse me from watching anything else.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I think that is because you had to write for a certain YouTube channel one of those movies.
Yeah. Not unfortunate that I had to write for them, but unfortunate that I had to watch Retaliation or Resurgence or Redemption so many times.
It's one of those. Yeah, one of those rewords. All right, so we're going to get those reviews done. We're also going to do best ever beach movies, movies that feature a beach in a prominent way. So I look forward to you guys using your vetoes on some of my choices that do not include beaches.
No, I've got one that is really, really on the edge.
And of course, we'll do some buried treasure as well. So we're looking forward to getting into it. So why wait any longer? Let's talk a little bit about Old.
Wow. Can you believe I found this online?
I guess it's not that secret a piece.
Whoa. Who would leave this?
From the hotel. They're so rusted.
What's happening?
Found stuff from the hotel in the sand.
A family on a tropical holiday discovers that their secluded beach where they are staying is somehow causing them to age rapidly, reducing their entire lives into a single day. Now, none of that is spoilery. All of that is in the promotional material, you know, that this beach has magic aging powers. But we are going to avoid spoiling like we would with anything. And of course, that takes on another level when you're dealing with M. Night and everybody's expecting the twist. What is the twist? I would just say this. We talked about this a little bit in the member show as well. I think we should all try to get out of that mindset. We should really try to just accept stories for what they are. Let them turn when they turn. If you see a twist coming, you see it coming. That's fun. If you don't, that can be fun too. But I think twist culture, and by the way, M. Night is responsible for certainly a lot of it. He has used it as part of, you know, his promotion.
Every movie.
But anyhow, let's talk about, what did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ian, start us off.
I have tortured myself over the last 48 hours. I go to bed at night with a different rating. I wake up in the morning with a different rating.
Welcome to an M. Night movie.
I have reluctantly landed in liked it.
Ian liked Old.
On the cusp.
On the cusp.
On the cusp of Old.
Liking
of
old. I love it.
It's just okay.
That's great. That is great. Andrew, what about you? Like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I am on the low side of liked it.
Whoa!
So again, right on the cusp.
Same. Look, here, guys, you don't understand, nice, like how different this is from the main opinion. Like, people hate this movie.
I know. And maybe that's motivating,
really,
me to like it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. People, yeah,
really, really
hate this movie. Guys,
well,
guys.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I thought for sure I would be the one liking this movie the most. And that still might be true, but I'm right where you guys are. Low end of liked it. I have to say I like this movie. And I think, yeah, I think the reason is I can't quit thinking about it. And that says something. Like, there's something about this story being told and what he's doing. And we will get into the many, many negatives that can be said, mm-hmm, about this movie. And there are many. But despite them, I come away going, I'm glad I listened to that story. That was a fun little story, interesting, yeah, little story. I'm still thinking about it. It took some interesting turns for me. Like, so it's just one of those things where I have to come out the other side going, yeah, I liked it. I have to admit this. I know everybody hated it. I also know I'm an M. Night apologist. I know this about myself. I am biased in this. I get it. But I did. I liked the movie. What were some of the things you guys liked?
I was engaged from beginning to end. Like, I wanted, like, I didn't want to miss anything, you know?
Right.
And I think that's one of the, you know, like, the metaphors of the movies, you know, like, you know, if you rapidly age, it's like a metaphor for like seeing your kids grow up before your, mm-hmm, eyes, you know? And it's like, yeah, oh man, they're this old already, you know? And I missed so much, but the movie kind of, you know, threw that on me where I'm like, I don't want to miss anything.
Yeah. You
know, every moment was precious.
Yeah.
So
what about you, Ian?
Does it oddly make you feel better that me and Andrew were in the same
region
as
you? Of course it does.
It's like with Pixar stuff. You don't know. Am I
right?
Is this good or not? Because I just love it regardless.
Well, and notice none of us said it was good. Like, understand, no, you know, none of us said this, yes, was a good movie. We all said we kind of liked it or on the low end of liked it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, continuing.
Yeah. So it's, you've just got to respect, if nothing else, you've got to respect what he swung for in this movie. And it is, and it's a fascinating story. It's a great thought experiment. As always, he deals with so many themes and so many, I say deals, shoves them in your throat.
But he's not dealing with metaphor here. He's dealing with maxiphor.
Exactly. Specifically, no metaphor here. It's right here. You go. This is exactly what's happening, and this character is going to tell you that. But regardless, it was entertaining, and like you said, Andrew, I wasn't twiddling my thumbs or thinking get on with it. It was paced fantastically. And I think that's what tortured me, is that why don't I love this film? Why don't I like it? And when you get those feelings, you almost go 100% the opposite direction. And it was, well, I must not like it then. Mm-hmm. But it definitely would have felt like an insult to say it's just okay. So I knew I had to go somewhere. It was either I didn't like it or I liked it. And this morning it's landed in liked it.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it was like... the story itself is really what kept me captivated, but at the beginning of this movie where they're laying out all the exposition and everything, I was more captivated and engaged because it was a Shyamalan movie, to where you feel like you have to think and notice and analyze every single aspect of the movie, all the details that are coming at you and stuff like that, because you're like, ooh, is this going to be what comes to play later on?
That something. That palm tree is definitely going to come back in the last few minutes. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah, something, just any of that. But quickly, I would say, like, when the story actually picks up, like, whenever the whole enemy of the movie, I guess, is the best way to say it or whatever, actually starts to take place. It wasn't the fact that it was an M. Night movie that kept me engaged. It was the fact that it was engaging in and of itself, regardless of who directed this movie. So, yeah, it was interesting. One thing I noticed, and I don't know if M. Night has all of his actors do this, but he has a way of getting all of his actors to be incredibly cheesy in his movies. Mm-hmm. Having said that, though, Rufus Sewell is really good in this movie. He was a very intriguing and captivating character to get to know.
I've been formulating this for a while, and I think it is a nice, for me, kind of a cohesive way to look at how M. Night makes movies and how he directs actors, because you see it in all his performers, all the way back to Bruce Willis in Sixth Sense. You know, there's a stoic, staid, almost, like you said, can be cheesy, but it's very stated kind of acting. And I think, and I've heard M. Night talk about the fact that he sees movies as genuinely being about childlike wonder. For him, it is about storytelling at its essence. When you're a kid and you're watching a story and it's like, oh, cool, that guy did that thing. Oh, did you hear what that person said? Oh, that's cool. And he almost directs his actors to be children. And in many ways, he puts children at the center of his stories. Who's the protagonist of The Sixth Sense? It's a child who sees the wonder of the afterlife. You know, like, I see dead
people.
That's
one way to put it.
You know, well, no, I'm just saying, like, this is a common theme in his movies. Even in Unbreakable, it's a child who sees the wonder of superpowers in his dad. You know what I mean? Like, in Signs, it's Joaquin Phoenix as a child seeing the wonder of sitting on the couch with other children, seeing the wonder of an alien invasion. And then he makes this explicit in Lady in the Water, which he has called a bedtime story and a story that he's told to his girls for bedtime, you know, kind of idea. And he just makes it explicit in the character names and all that stuff about how what matters is the story. And are you interested in knowing what happens in the story? What doesn't matter is if it makes sense. What doesn't matter is if the lines sound like they're, you know, melodramatic. What matters is the story engaging you? This is it to me seems to be his philosophical underpinning to the point he just goes, I am going to not dumb everything else down, but tone everything else down in a way that story has to be the emphasis. And I'm not saying that's a good choice. I'm not saying it makes for better movies. In fact, the things that people hate about this movie, I 100% get. 100% understand how you feel like you're being spoon-fed and how you feel like the performances are over the top and terrible, and you feel like, you know, like, I get it, like, all that stuff, but I think it's intentional. I really,
it,
you know.
Oh, it is 100% is.
I feel like he's doing it on purpose because he's trying to say something about, you know, become a child. Let go of that logic that you're trying to apply to stuff. Let go of that questioning everything. Just watch and give yourself to it. And he's daring you to become a child yourself and give yourself to it, which makes the themes of this movie even more interesting because it is about children being adults, or, you know, so there's like all that stuff here. It's just, I don't know. I'm fascinated by it, if nothing else. But I think that's one of the reasons I kind of come down and go, I think he's just, this is his auteurship. This is what, how he is as a director. And I get why many people don't like it, but it's always been there. It's not new. Even in the movies you love, it's there. Maybe it feels a little slicker than these, but it's there.
But when he says, like, it doesn't matter if it makes sense or anything like that, I'm paraphrasing what you
said.
Sure, yeah. I'm pushing back on that because whenever, in this movie specifically, whenever you state the nature of the issue, like what's causing all of this, any director or any storyteller, it doesn't matter whether you say it or not, you have to follow the rules of the world you have created.
Correct.
And whenever there are inconsistencies in the rules, that sticks out. You can't just say, well, just chalk it up to childlike wonder. I'm not saying that's what he's doing here, but there are a lot of moments in this movie where if they would have gone a different route with explaining the nature of this paranormal, whatever you want to call it, I'm not saying it's paranormal, but, you know, this event.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you set rules, you have to follow those rules. And you can't just say, just ignore it, you know, mm-hmm. enjoy the movie. Because what makes the movie as enjoyable is whenever the audience can follow the story in a consistent, understanding way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
that is probably my biggest issue with this movie, is the lack of consistency when it comes to how this phenomenon acts.
Yes. Yeah, I and don't get me wrong, I don't think M. Night's attitude about this excuses it. In fact, I think I said the opposite. I think, you know, I think it's something I totally understand and think should be taken into consideration. But I do think he wants you to be less worried about those rules and more interested in, you know, how are they going to win this day? You know what I mean? Like, just the core elements of the story. I will say, to finish off kind of that thought about kind of overarching idea of his directing style, you think about his least successful and, in my opinion, worst movie, The Last Airbender. It's opposite of what he tries to do. The Last Airbender is a child story.
It's all about
childlike
wonder.
It's a child story that has adult complexity. And he wants to tell adult stories with childlike complexity. It's the opposite of what he's good at. And I think it shows in kind of how he approaches that material. But Ian, I want to hear some more from you. So what are some other things you liked or didn't like about the movie?
Well, I totally agree with you on that point. I think it is definitely deliberate, because he's not a bad director, so you can't.
Well, he's not some directing. Some people would disagree with you on that, but
he's an inconsistent director.
That's very, very subjective. But I think he's good enough to get the performance out of an actor that he wants. So I think there's enough consistency throughout this film in the performances that is what he's going for. Like, this film is almost Inside Out. Like, each character is a different part of the brain and a different emotion in the brain. Now, people don't act like that in the real world. Everybody can feel everything. But in this film, they are almost single-minded with the emotion that they, mm-hmm. they follow and they pursue. That's storytelling, isn't it? It's metaphor and it's not in the real world. So maybe we're a bit too hung up on realism and is it realistic? But those were the bits that took me out of the movie,
sure,
unfortunately.
Me too.
So when they're being super over the top and super dramatic and humans don't act like that, it reminds me that I'm in a cinema, and that drops it so many points for me because I go to the movies to escape. So I don't want to be reminded that I'm watching a bunch of people on screen act. This is why I'm still so conflicted. I think you need to come back to me in a year after I've watched this film again.
And really I feel the same way.
No, right now.
No, I genuinely feel the same way. You know, I can see on a second viewing or a third viewing, you know, my opinions changing. And I had the same experiences as you. I do think that this movie does kind of take you out of it sometimes with that stuff. I found myself contemplating how amazing this movie would be if David Fincher directed it. You know, like if
oh, interesting.
You know what I mean? Like, in that's not a great thing when you're like, you know, who would have done this better? You know, like that's.
Do you know what I'd rather be doing now? Aww.
So
you say that, and I agree with you, but also whenever the trailer first came out for this movie, as soon as it started, I'm like, ooh, this feels like a Shyamalan movie.
Sure. You know? Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
He just has. Yeah, it feels like a story he would tell. That doesn't mean that there are people out there who couldn't do it better.
But I found myself, I like this world. I like where the story's going. I like where it went. You know, what would it look like with a more, you know, somebody who's is a more like a grounded director, you know, whose thing is to really make it feel authentic and real and, you know, can make me feel like this is a real beach somewhere as opposed to just a bedtime story, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We have to do a spoiler on this.
Yes, absolutely. We will be doing Sif spoil on this and talking about some of the specifics of the things you're talking about, Andrew, and some other things as well.
Just like we have to do a spoiler on Snake Eyes.
No, we do not have to do a spoiler on Snake Eyes. That is not true.
Oh, okay.
I've
got things I can do in the background. That's fine.
Now, if you are serious and you have stuff you want to talk about, we certainly can.
Oh, no.
All right. Fair enough. We haven't talked about any of the... Well, we've talked a little bit about the performances. You mentioned Rufus Sewell.
Oh, he's so good.
There's something that Alex Wolff, Thomasin McKenzie, and Eliza Scanlon are asked to do here that is different from every other performer. I shouldn't say that because I guess the Amun Elliott character has to do this as well for the older version. But because they're aging, obviously, they make a choice that they didn't want to do this like Boyhood. And actually film over the course of 50 years. So they had to
Can
make
you imagine how disappointing this
that would be
final
incredible.
Product would be. If this was the result of 50 years of work,
right.
Then no, sorry, I hate it.
That's right. So I'm curious how you felt about that, how you felt about the performances that were, again, a Shyamalan staple of adults acting like children, but in this case, having even more reason to do so.
Yeah.
How did you feel about like those performances specifically, the Alex Wolff, Thomasin McKenzie, and Eliza Scanlon performances?
Specifically for Alex Wolff, I don't enjoy his performances in general when it comes to horror films. Like when he does like Hereditary or this, whenever he does comedic movies, I think that's really where he shines. I understand that his style of performance and what he's doing in this movie is what's asked of him, but at the same time, it's just something about his performance that I'm just like, I'm not buying it. Also, I think that there's inconsistencies with the way he and some of the other children act whenever they're supposed to be acting their age, regardless of their physical appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's across all the performances, not just Alex. I want to make sure I get that right. Some of them are better than others. I think Alex is the weakest. I think... and also, when are we going to stop casting 25-year-olds to play 15-year-olds, you know?
It's a little different in this movie, but yeah. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
No, it says they're playing... Alex Wolff is playing...
The teenage 15, version of
Trent 15 is what it says. Trent aged to 15,
but we all know that means like 15 to 35. You know, like he has a range he's playing in this movie.
Yeah.
But I think Thomasin McKenzie is the best out of all those. That really,
I agree.
Does like perform for like the age transformation performance?
I thought she was great. I thought she managed to walk that line in a really interesting way, and she might be my favorite performance in the movie.
For me,
I think
it's Rufus,
so.
But she's right
I think
there.
So, yeah. What did you think about the performances, Ian?
Go on, Andrew.
I just really quick, I want to say, is mid-sized sedan the coolest name for a character in the history of cinema?
So funny.
It's such an amazing name. Okay.
Such a generic
I had to throw that out there.
This movie's funny, right? Like, there are several laugh-out-loud moments 100%. In this movie. Like, intentionally, right? Like, sometimes...
Laughing with them, not at them.
I think so, yeah.
We'll have to ask him, actually. He's like, no, you weren't supposed to laugh at that.
That wasn't a joke.
And so I think we get diminishing returns as we go through the movie. So I think the children, the children mm-hmm. are fantastic. I think they do a really, really, really good job. And then the teenage years, that's where the most amount of focus is on my mind is changing, my body is changing. I know that I'm in a different body, but I know that my brain hasn't caught up. And then it's almost like that's forgotten about in the last probably third to half of the movie. It's just the movie isn't interested in talking about that anymore. And they just decide to turn 30 and deal with it, or turn 50 and deal with it. So it's, yeah, it starts off really strong and then trails off toward the end, annoyingly.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that was the intent. I think the story was just interested in other things at that moment. Yeah. And, you know,
but you can't put that down.
You can't.
I mean, once you've, it gets, if anything, it gets more interesting the older they get, because mm-hmm. you have still got, right, well, now he's 6 plus 1 day. Mm-hmm. Like, if you thought turning into a teenager was weird, good God, try turning 40, like, try turning 50. Like, that, for me, is more interesting. And
tell
I think
me
that's
about
the biggest
it.
Downfall. You don't even know what it's like to turn 30, Aaron.
Of course not. Of course not.
And that's the, for me, that's the biggest overall letdown of the film, is that I think it's trying to tell too many stories. It's, wouldn't it be cool if, and then it does that 10 times instead of focusing on one or two of the wouldn't it be cool ifs.
I agree. I do think this movie is overstuffed. I think M. Mm-hmm. Night was like, I could be wrong, but I picture M. Night going, okay, here's the theme. How many things in our life play into this theme?
Exactly.
Let's get every single one of them in this movie. You know,
imagine if that happened. Imagine if this happened.
Right. Thinking you wish you had more time.
Definitely could have done without.
Thinking. Wishing you had more time with your parents. Let's stuff it in there. Wishing you had more time with your kids. Let's stuff it in there. You know, like, you know,
this would have been a great like alternate season of Lost, mm-hmm. but it hasn't got that time to do
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. Sure. I will also say I appreciated there is something nice about just a you know, not something based on IP, not a sequel, just a new story. Throw it out there for I think he spent like $20 million on it, which is peanuts. It made almost $20 million its opening weekend. This movie is a success, whether people like it or not. Financially, it is a success. So yeah, I think there's something to be said for that. Like, and I think that's where he's at, like his most comfortable is when he's telling these simple, small bedtime stories.
Little bottle episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I could actually see myself watching this one again, intentionally. Like, you know what? I wouldn't mind watching Old again.
Yeah.
There's enough here where I'm like, that part of the movie was fascinating. I want to go back and relive that moment. You know?
I'm the same, ironic. But not because I think there's anything more I need to discover, but there's something more I need to discover about myself and how I feel about the film. Like, I need to know what Ian thinks after a second watch, not because I think there's anything more to dig into.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think the Sif spoil will have a lot more to say specifically about certain mm-hmm. scenes, certain turns. We haven't talked at all about the end of this movie, which is fine. But we'll talk more about that in the spoilers. But I totally get why people hate this movie. 100% get it. I will take this over another Transformers movie every single day of the week. You know
absolutely.
What I mean? Like, it's just like,
yeah.
So, yeah. Anyhow, that's just That's me.
But what about another G.I. Joe movie? Hey.
Okay, bye guys. See you later. It's been a blast. Happy 300. Bye.
You know, we haven't even mentioned, that's a good thing to mention in our transition that Andrew just so nicely transitioned us into as we go to our next review. I don't think we mentioned Happy 300th episode of Sif Pop yet.
Well, I did the This Is Sparta thing at the beginning.
That's to, right, the 300.
Oh, that's what that was. I'm such a, I'm really
yeah,
dumb.
Yeah, for 300.
No, I was like, I'm not going to challenge it. That must be something in G.I. Joe. Like, did they just straight up rip off another movie?
No. Well, no, yes, but not This Is Sparta. Not the 300.
Yeah.
Yes, and we were joking about it in the members only show as well. It's a very arbitrary number. We have actually done almost twice that many episodes, technically, but this is the official 300th main numbered episode of Sif Pop. And going on 10 years next, I think, next summer. So, we're just about 9 years right now. So yeah.
Congrats, guys. Fun That's stuff. Big. That's
Fun
huge.
Stuff. Let's celebrate it by talking
where
about another G.I. Joe movie,
where does
shall
the
we?
Time go, Aaron? Where it's like where we're sitting on a beach.
I know.
We're
I
sitting
know.
On a beach just watching the tides wash away all the episodes.
M. Night Caldy was like, can I stuff that in my movie, too? I was like, no. That's ours.
No podcasts in your movie.
None.
No.
Zero. Let's talk about Snake Eyes G.I. Joe Origins.
Wish boy!
Boss wants to see you.
Am I in trouble?
Someone is.
This man betrayed our trust.
Do it.
I gotta get him a sword now!
You saved my life. We are going home.
I don't have a home.
Not yours. Mine.
After saving the life of their heir apparent, tenacious loner Snake Eyes is welcomed into an ancient Japanese clan called the Arashikage. I totally should have prepped on this. I think it's Arashikage, where he's taught the ways of the ninja warrior. But when secrets from his past are revealed, Snake Eyes' honor and allegiance will be tested, even if that means losing the trust of those closest to him. This is the third G.I. Joe movie, but the first to do the G.I. Joe origins and try to kind of give us some input on a single character. You know, maybe so down the road we can get whatever the G.I. Joe version of the Avengers is. You know, that is, I think, the idea that they're going for here.
No, thanks.
What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, I'll go to you first since Ian hasn't seen
it. I'm curious what Ian thought of this movie.
Yeah, Ian.
Well, I just think that since X-Men Origins, Wolverine did so well. I'm glad that G.I. Joe's doing the same thing. I can tell you a lot about the other film in this franchise that's terrible, but...
You know, the correlation between using Origins in the title of this and in Origins Wolverine, I feel pretty similar about both movies, but I'm just going to go with I didn't like it, and I'll let Aaron go real quick.
I think it's okay. Low side of okay.
This is a nothing movie.
Correct. 100%. That is absolutely 100% correct. Since I liked it just a tad more, apparently, I will talk about that a little bit further. I think my general assessment is that this is actually a well-done story. Like, the characters all fit. Everybody is, you know, it makes sense. I wasn't confused. I knew what the motivations were. I knew, you know, what people were trying, who was double-crossing who, how that was working. Like, everything was laid out really well. I knew I liked some of the characters, but I came to the end of it, and I was just like, I have seen all of this a million times. There is nothing new here. There's, like, this feels like the algorithm movie. You know, a computer designed this movie, spit it out. It is technically proficient and utterly boring. And that happens sometimes. Sometimes good movies are just boring. And I think this is one of those times. It's so interesting that in many ways we have two movies here, one of which is a bad movie that I found exciting, and the other that is a good movie that I found boring. And that is so weird how that happens sometimes. But in the same way with Old, I'm willing to admit, yeah, I think maybe this is a bad movie, but I kind of liked it. I would say here, yeah, I think maybe this is a good movie, but I was bored out of my mind.
Well,
so,
it's a copy paste from every single action movie
and is what
every
it feels
single
like.
Michael Bay movie
yeah.
of the last 15 years.
Yeah.
If you've seen those, you've seen this, just implement the characters of the G.I. Joe universe in that story. Oh, you're coming from this tragic backstory. Now we gotta have your story of how you got to who you are now. Oh no, are you gonna betray somebody? Or are you gonna be betrayed? Take your pick. Now it's time for your redemption arc in the third act, and then riding off into the sunset to meet the other characters in this franchise.
Yeah.
That's literally this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there an argument to be made that perhaps, rightly or wrongly, that's maybe what the audience wants from a G.I. Joe film? Maybe that's, they're not looking for a discerning action movie that does something brand new. Maybe they just want this character that they're familiar with doing something very safe and what appears to be entertaining. Maybe you guys just want too much from it.
No, absolutely possible. Absolutely possible. I think there is a little bit of the normal exhaustion of a movie lover who wants something new, mm-hmm. you know, going on here. I think for a wider, more general audience, they might really enjoy this. Now, a lot of people weren't interested in seeing it, apparently. You know, to many people, it was a huge surprise that Old came in number one at the box office this weekend and beat out Snake Eyes, as well as, you know, every other recent one. I kind of felt that coming just because the buzz for Old seemed to be more like in my non, like, you know how you have your movie loving friends and then you have the periphery where it's just like normal people.
Yeah. People who like Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, that group of people. Yeah.
No, those are the movie lovers. The normies, so to speak, were more excited about Old than Snake Eyes. I think that's an interesting kind of thing. But I think if they watch this, I think you're right. Maybe they'll have a good time. And maybe that's, you know, is the movie supposed to be for G.I. Joe fans or is it supposed to be for a wide audience? And, you know, how are they?
Well, I would think wide audience because G.I. Joe, I don't know. I'm not hearing the same buzz around G.I. Joe that you do Fast and Furious or whatever else.
If I will give one thing to the old G.I. Joe movies that, is it Ray Parker? Is that who did the motion capture for Snake Eyes
yes.
and the
yes.
old ones?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not that it matters. Like they totally wasted it. Wasting Ray Parker is my biggest. Carry on.
But I will say this, and maybe this is just more personal for me in this franchise. I know this is, you know, a new step in the direction. But what I liked about Snake Eyes and those other two movies was the mystery about him. You know, he was the silent warrior. He took a vow of silence and stuff like that. And his rivalry with Storm Shadow was one that was to be felt instead of understood. You know, like you feel, you know, the hatred that they have for each other. In this one, it kind of takes away that mystery to this unseen character because you, in those other movies, you never saw him outside of his armor. He never said a word. He was a walking weapon. Mm-hmm. And for that franchise, that was cool. But now that mystery for me is kind of like, oh, so he is just a guy. Not to take away from, you know, everything he does, but he was more than human, I guess you could say, in those other ones, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the mystery seems to be part of the character. That is interesting because I feel like one of the things Marvel has done right in building a cinematic universe is they tapped someone who understood the core of the characters to design their storylines and, you know, movie layout. And if the core of the character of Snake Eyes is the mystery, this movie fails on that. You know what I mean? Like it undermines that in a lot of ways. That's an interesting point, Andrew, that I hadn't thought of. I'm not as familiar with the kind of the G.I. Joe backstory, but you're right. In the other movies, that is who Snake Eyes is a complete mystery. And that's, you know, kind of part of the interesting thing about it. I think Henry Golding is fine. I really like, is it Iko Uwais?
Uwais.
Yeah. I really like him.
From The Raid. Yeah.
I think he may be my favorite part of the movie. It's not a character that's like front and center or anything. There was an energy to that character that brought the movie a little bit of life that I didn't find anywhere else. And so I like that. Him and Blind Master, Peter Mensah. I kind of liked their dynamic and what they did in that. So as far as that, yeah. Samara Weaving's not really in it enough to really comment on too much.
She's there.
She is there.
One word review for G.I. for Snake Eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what else is there to say?
Nothing. I feel like we're just kind of rushing through this, but I legitimately can't think of much else to say about this movie because it's nothing for me.
I would have been so annoyed if this had been the film that I'd seen. Like, dates are so arbitrary. This could have been switched. Uh-huh. And I'd be like, you know what, Aaron? Screw you, Insif Pop. I don't want to do the show.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It is... It's interesting because, you know, there is a mid-credit scene. It's a very quick mid. It's not even... It's like front-credit scene. It's like, you know, it's like directed by credit and then back to a scene from the movie. that is obviously supposed to be very important for setting up the franchise and some different things. I don't, even as a non-G.I. Joe person, I kind of knew this. Like, it wasn't like what it reveals isn't something that I think is supposed to be a huge surprise. I think we all knew we were kind of heading there. But my question is, Andrew, does that make you excited to watch another one, even though you didn't like this one? Or, okay, that's what I wondered. I'm the same way.
I had a few G.I. Joe action figures growing up, but I was never fully invested in the universe I was being told. Like, I never watched the show as a kid or anything like that. So my investment, as opposed to something like Marvel or DC, is lacking, for a better word.
Yeah. Ian, do you have any questions as the one who didn't see it that you would ask before obviously rushing right out next week and seeing it?
Yeah, it's massively intellectual. And that's not fair. It doesn't need to be an intellectual film.
Yeah.
You've done performances, story. Does it have nods towards the preceding two following two films?
I think this is supposed to be a reboot.
Or is it just an island?
I really think this is. I think so. I think this is completely ignoring the first two. So, yeah.
That's an odd choice. I think, I don't know, when you said mid-credit scene, like, that really triggered me because I understand Marvel doing it because you have this wide variety of source material to go through and Iron Man turning up at the end of The Incredible Hulk was brilliant, fantastic. I don't know why G.I. Joe and Snake Eyes feels it's earned that. Right. Like, does it really think that there's going to be a large amount of people going, I know exactly what that means, or will it be three people?
Yeah.
It just seems surprising to me.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I will say again, I knew what it meant, but and that seems to speak that it's a pretty general kind of thing, but... but yeah.
Well, this is also coming from the person that doesn't have G.I. Joe in this country. We have Action Man.
Action Man.
He is 100% called Action Man. It's not my buried treasure, but everybody go and Google the Action Man action figures and you will be in for a treat.
Nice.
Yeah.
He has a theme. He has a theme song.
We will
Action
all have
Action Man.
We will all have Battle to check that
Force.
Out.
They all have that giant square jaw.
There you go. Yeah. That is so important. So important.
Can't fight crime without it.
Got to have the square jaw if you're a man and the hourglass if you're a woman. That's just how it is, people. That's what our dolls taught us. I mean, action figures, whatever you want to call them. All right. Before we move into our best ever challenge, I do want to thank our Sif Pop members for supporting the show, keeping it running, keeping it going, the website as well. I would I would just say it means so much to go and check the messages that come in, the you know, the new members that come in each week, and just say that they're willing to kind of vote for this show and what happens here with a few bucks every month. Thank you for that. We try to give back by having some fun with you in different ways. One of those are the bonus episodes, like we've talked about. You have your own ad-free bonus podcast episode feed. In fact, it has all the episodes in it ad-free. So you'll get the main episodes as well as the bonus episodes with no ads in them. And some other fun stuff you can check out there as well at patreon.com/siftpop. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We appreciate you guys and couldn't do it without you.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's move on to the best ever challenge. We're going to do best ever movies featuring a beach prominently.
Veto.
Prominently.
Veto.
We'll go number five to number one. I'll kick us off, and you're not going to veto my first one. I can guarantee you that. My number five is Castaway.
Trump.
You may trump it.
That's the first time I've been on the show three times and I'm yet to be able to trump anyone.
Really?
Nicely done.
That's exciting.
I think Andrew beat you to it, though. So technically, Ian, you still haven't trumped anyone.
He could trump me still. Yeah. He could still trump me.
We'll see. This is like Snap or whatever it is. Just, yeah, you end up with
Andrew,
broken hands.
Are you right? Going next? What's your number five?
I'll let Ian go.
Oh, man, this might get vetoed. The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. There's water. I'm not going to veto it, Ian, but you're really stretching. You're begging for a veto with that one, for sure.
There is sand everywhere. Her entire life leads to a beach. So does mine, technically. Well, I guess so does mine as well. But hey, therefore, everything is. I could have gone for Signs and would have been all right. Mm-hmm. Little Mermaid is great. It's not my favorite Disney movie, but it's the only one I could think of that has a beach. I would have done Aladdin, but that's definitely a desert, and desert doesn't count as a beach. I Googled it. I tried to negotiate my way into Aladdin, but mm-hmm. I just could not do it. Great music, great characters. Some of it is a little tone deaf watching it. Sorry. A lot of it is tone deaf watching it with a modern pair of eyes, probably all of it. But childhood memories. I like this movie unashamedly.
There is
apart from the bits that are shameful.
There is
Phil for Eric.
What's that?
Yeah.
Oh, don't Phil. You remember? Yeah, producer Phil for Eric. Eric. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
I have to say there is a podcast I listen to called Revisionist History, Malcolm Gladwell's podcast. Mm. And they are currently, right now, in the midst of a 3-episode breakdown of The Little Mermaid. And it is three episodes. Yeah, I'm finding it so interesting. One of the points they've already made, I've only listened to the first episode. One of the points they've already made is about how the movie treats contract law as this thing that it's so fascinating and interesting.
They're not wrong.
And the message of the movie is that, hey, you signed a contract. Oh, well, And it's like, that's not what contracts are for. Like, you know, like courts strike down immoral contracts all the time. Like, but, yeah. But there's something like about it that even the god of the ocean can't like destroy yeah. the Little Mermaid contract.
But you see, he signed it with a trident instead
right.
of a pen.
Right. Right.
And that is the pen only has one prong. A trident has three prongs.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's uh-huh. three parts of litigation you got to get through. That's
right.
Just
totally.
Not worth
yeah.
it.
Totally understand. Totally understand. Yeah. Andrew, what is your number five?
I'm going to go with Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
In my honorable mentions, yeah.
What's the opposite of Trump? What's the you want that movie
Rump?
So low that you never talk
Rump?
About it? Yeah, Pumert?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I think it's a fun, it's just a fun, happy movie, ironically, considering the story, like, and what it's dealing with, like, an ex relationship and finding love, but they made Hawaii a character in that movie, and it was really fun because they transitioned from showing like the resort, you know, aspect of Hawaii and stuff like that, and they showed you, you know, like what it was like for the people who actually live on Hawaii. It was a good movie. I liked it. Not great. It's number five worthy.
I'm picking up that Ian hates the movie, but we're not going to give him a chance to...
Oh, you're not? You're going to stifle me? I mean, I've got a contract over here.
This is about
otherwise.
A celebration of film, Ian. Celebration of film. No, why do you
there
hate...
There are always
why you,
exceptions.
Why do you hate the movie?
I'm on an island. I know so many...
I get it.
See what I did? Not Ireland or Ireland.
That is
an island.
Almost that is almost as good as the beast pun that you made in the pre-show.
Which I just
almost.
Slipped in. I don't know if that was a pun. That was just doing a Shyamalan and yeah. shoving it in your face.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I do not like. I think it's got. It's a hideous, horrible subject matter. It is miserable. I dislike every minute of this film because somebody forced me to watch it. And you should never be forced to watch a film.
This is
so
true.
That may well have. Put a tinge on my vision for this film, but yes, I respect that you like it and judge you slightly.
But he yells rump for that one.
Rump.
Yes, I do. I yell rump. Rump.
All right, to our number fours, correct?
Yep.
This is where I have Saving Private Ryan. So
me too.
Nice.
Amazing.
Great. I knew you guys were going to have that on your list.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're
wrong. But it's not prominently featured throughout the movie.
Well, I didn't there's say throughout a, the movie.
More than The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, more than The Little Mermaid for sure.
Yeah. Whenever I did this list, I was like, prominent for me was like a lingering aspect throughout the entire movie.
Ah.
The Normandy scene is like the scene everybody remembers. From
yeah,
Saving
it is.
Private
it
Ryan,
is.
So mm-hmm. I don't yeah. fault you guys. If I would have counted it, it would have been my number one.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Also, one of the best movies ever to feature a female name in the title. Like this movie, just you know, lines
Vito!
Up with, lines up with so many categories. You know, there's not a ton left to say other than if you haven't seen it, just be prepared when you do. And sometimes when you say that kind of thing, it keeps people from watching something, and that's that is an unintended natural consequence of understanding that something is serious and meaningful and is, you know, it's not homework, but it feels like homework before you start watching it. That's the thing that's so hard is like once you're watching it, you're like, oh, I'm glad I finally watched this, but it's just hard to pull that trigger sometimes.
Yeah. I think a better way of saying it would be something like, this is an important movie that should be watched that deals with a very, very difficult subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be in the right headspace to see what you're about to see and to appreciate what you're about to see.
Yeah, yeah.
But even that makes it feel like homework. As soon as you say you should, my mm-hmm. brain goes, well, I'm not.
Like, yeah, that human nature
I have the
thing.
I have the same feeling with The Godfather. Like, I am, it's list of shame. I haven't seen any of The Godfather because at this point it feels like I have to, which means I've got to make time and sit down and do it. And it's just weird how that mentally changes your yeah. perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andrew, what about you? What's your number four?
That's Ian next.
Well, Ian's was Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, both of us.
Oh, right. Okay.
Saving Ryan's Privates.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go Saving Ryan's Privates. That's a different movie. I'm going to go with The Descendants.
Yeah, I had that in my honorable mentions as well.
Same, yeah.
This is a interesting movie that I did not think I was going to like as much as I did. I think Shailene Woodley is really what steals the show in this, just the turmoil she's going through, like, while her father, George Clooney, is, like, she knew about everything that was going on, and then she had to reveal it to George Clooney. So the journey through, I think it was Kauai, I forget what island they were on, mm-hmm. but, this movie is beautiful. Oh, this movie's so beautiful with the scenery shots it chooses. And just the journey they go on is it reminds me a little bit of Little Miss Sunshine in the sense that you feel so many different emotions as this journey progresses. Like you're happy, you're sad. In moments, it's like tense and you're a little bit nervous and stuff like that. But in the end, it's just a really well-told story that I really appreciated.
Yep. I agree. I love The Descendants. If you haven't seen it, this movie is great. Absolutely, wow, one you should get on your list. It's great, great, great.
If you guys have Saving Private Ryan at number 4, you guys got to have some heavy hitters.
I thought Aaron was going to have that way, way higher. I'm fascinated.
I will say my entire top 5 are in my top 100 movies of all time. So... So yeah, there's some. There's still one that I don't think you'll veto it, but
let's see. Hey, I can't.
Once we've got the Little Mermaid on the list, I'm feeling fine. I'm feeling absolutely fine.
It's the only reason you let it on, wasn't it? Because you knew something bigger was coming.
All right, our number 3s. I've got Roma at my number 3, and again, the beach scene from Roma is probably the most prominent scene that people remember from the movie, and one of the most incredibly shot scenes that Cuarón has done. I've spoken many times about my love and the depth of the love I have for this movie, and all the meaning I find in it, so I don't need to necessarily revisit all that, other than to say I think it's genius. I think it's a work of genius, and you know, I've watched it a few times, and each time I find something new that I pick out. So
I really, really need to watch this film. It's pretty high up on my list of shame, actually. I know it's quite very recent, a couple mm-hmm. of years ago,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, need to watch that film.
Roma is my number 3. I mean, there are plenty of people with that opinion or worse, you know, that find it snooty or boring or too artistic or whatever, but...
It's an artistic film.
Yeah, it definitely is.
But I'm actually with Aaron. I don't obviously love it as much as he does. It's... I find it to be a very profound and beautiful movie. And it's... I love a movie that allows me to look inside not only another culture, but also another... time mm-hmm. for another culture.
Yeah.
And that was really, really fascinating.
You can tell
it's a beautiful movie.
How personal it is to him.
Yes.
You know, you can tell with every frame how much this story means to him. I mean, it's based on a real life nanny that they had growing up.
Yep. Yeah.
And and you can just feel it. You can feel it in every frame. All right, what's your number 3, Ian?
This is where I have Jaws.
Ooh,
Trump.
Yes.
Yeah, I was expecting a Trump.
Yeah, I have that in honorable mention.
Man, what are your other ones?
Oh, he's got Jaws. He's got Jaws 3 at the top. That's number 1.
See.
Oh,
Ian right, knows yeah. me. Ian knows me. Andrew, what is your number 3?
This is where I Point Break.
Also my honorable mentions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't quite bring myself to put it on the list, but yeah, it's close.
It's an amazing movie. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I love this film. I do.
No, this movie's great. The whole Fast and the Furious before Fast and the Furious came around. The whole we're not so different, you and I aspect of the cop, you know, criminal relationship. It's fun. It's an action movie that kind of has heart, and that's rare. It's rare. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You just love the relationship between these two.
Yeah.
And some of the stunts are really, really impressive. Whenever Keanu Reeves jumps out of the plane without a parachute.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just a fun action movie. It's just really, really, really good. So Yeah,
I just can't unsee the shooting gun in the air scene since Hot Fuzz. I can't unsee that now.
Have you ever pointed your gun in the air and gone, ah?
No, I haven't ever gone, ah.
You know, Cornetto trilogy lines sound so much better coming out of your mouth, Ian, than they do mine. So I just,
yeah.
If you don't mind, I'm just going to call you anytime I want to quote one of the Cornetto trilogy and just have you do it instead.
Let's do it.
All right, I think
back to the Winchester.
I think that
Love it.
That brings us to our number twos. Number two for me is Inception. I have it number two.
Wait, what?
Inception.
Oh, the first and the last
scene. Son of a beast.
Right? I mean, it's the whole bookends of the film is the, you know, the beach and the you know, it's slipping my brain what it's called. The final level of purgatory. It's not purgatory,
limbo?
Is it?
Limbo.
Yeah.
I'm so annoyed I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that probably should have been on my list. That's actually a really
number
good
one,
pick.
Isn't it?
So, Inception's my number two. I you know, we've talked about this movie a lot as well. The Prestige is Nolan's best movie, in my opinion. That movie is, you know, excuse the pun or don't, it's up to you, but it's pure magic. It's just an incredible film. And,
No beaches, though.
I thought about it. No, there are none. Inception is the one that if there were to be a challenger for best Nolan movie for me, it would be Inception. I just think he's doing some thinking in this movie that is astounding, and he combines it with incredibly emotional movement through the characters and what they're dealing with. And I add to that the fact that people still to this day have arguments about what the reality of this movie is. I love it when a movie can do that. So Inception is my number two. Ian, what do you got at number two?
I don't know. I've lost interest now. I'm gonna kick off The Little Mermaid and stick Inception somewhere. It's
all right,
fine.
Fair enough.
Number two is where I have Castaway.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Oh, man. I love this movie. Look at what I have created. I love Tom Hanks, and this is Tom Hanks for 7.5 hours just going through every single possible emotion, just doing everything. Just I can't say enough about how much I love this film. You could sack off the last 20 minutes with the wife and I don't need any of that, but everything up until that point is just perfect. You cry, you're angry, you can't believe he's lost Wilson. How do you get emotion from a ball and a bit of blood?
How do you get emotion from an ice skate in a tube?
No, Aaron, no. Actually, Ian, I'm going to push back on the ending of the movie with Helen Hunt. I think we needed that moment to realize that, yes, he may have escaped the island, but the world that he was trying to get back to is gone, and he has to find a new world within himself, himself. I want to know if, like, I just want the movie to go on for like 5 more minutes and tell me if he went to go and talk to the woman who had the package. Like, I want to know if he settled down with her, you know, if that could have blossomed into anything. I don't know. There's so much to love about this movie, though.
I am with Andrew on that. I think the ending is in many ways to say he escapes an island to be on a different island. And he, you know, he realizes all of that effort, and now he has another island that he's on because nobody can understand what he's been through. The entire world has changed, and now he has to figure out how to escape that island. And I think the movie is gorgeous. I think the plane crash is one of the most incredible crashes ever
terrifying.
Put to screen. Shout out to another beach property, Lost, thinking about great plane crashes and beaches. I think it's a stunning piece of work, and I also enjoy all 7.5 hours of Castaway. So
that's the director's cut, slightly official, shorter than the actual 9-hour version.
That's right. All right.
I don't feel the time in that movie.
No, you don't.
No, and that's kind of the point that I'm making, is that it's a beautiful 7.5 hours that you don't realize happens.
Yeah. So that brings us to our number ones. Since you both had Castaway at number two, this is the one I was most worried about being vetoed. But again, once we've got Little Mermaid on here.
We don't anymore. We don't.
It's Oh, no. I counted the Truman Show. There's enough that happens with him looking out over the water and trying to figure out how to sail, and, you know, or if he's going, like, his fear of the water. That's a fair point. That is a fair point. But it's like the promotion of it is a beach. Like, he sits more on a dock than the actual beach, like, when he's thinking about that kind of stuff. But
no, but what's the name of the girl crushing on, that he's like, he meets her at Fiji, and doesn't he get reunited with his dad on the beach too?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm
not going to take it away from you. I wouldn't have vetoed this one.
I love this movie. It's in my, you know, top 20 of all time. I think it's a special, special film. I think, as amazing as people know Jim Carrey is, I still think he's somehow underrated as a dramatic actor. I think he's doing things in this movie that no other actor could do. I feel like there are things he does in this movie that combine his elasticity with his dramatic chops in a way that I just don't know how anybody else pulls them off. And man, I love everything this movie has to say about free will, all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, anyhow, any chance to mention the Truman Show, I will take it, even if it's stretching the topic a little bit.
No, Phil, beaches don't have to have sand. There are rocky beaches.
Yeah.
There are pebble beaches.
That's true.
Pebble Although, beach. Actually, Phil's backing me up, so shut up, Andrew.
Fair enough.
All right, what do you got at number one, Ian?
This is where I have Dunkirk. Mm-hmm. I just thumbs up. Adore this movie. As much as Nolan managed to do some questionable things with sound in Tenet, he probably used all of the available skill he has to pull off the soundscape in Dunkirk, and now there's nothing left. Everything about this movie it's nearly perfect for me. Yes, on first watch can be slightly confusing with the time elements, but he doesn't overdo it, and there's enough sprinkled through where it all comes together in the last half an hour, and by that point, you are oriented really well. The performances are fantastic. It's such a respectful homage to Dunkirk and to that battle, and it's hard to go through it with a dry eye at the very end when you see the civilian fleet coming towards the beach and loading everyone up, get on board, and we're going to get you home. Like, oh, shivers.
How close phenomenal. Are you to the British side of that connection, that ferry, the Dunkirk ferry, back and forth? Like,
It's taught at schools. There's pretty much every single history class of every single year group has a module on some aspect of World War II and World War I. I don't think he's necessarily going for historical accuracy, but he's telling the story of, the people that risked everything to get the people home.
Well, geographically, though, is like if you were to drive to, you know...
You meant geographically, sorry.
Yeah, no.
I thought you meant like the actual history.
Both are fine.
I like both.
No, I could not be more landlocked. I am quadruply landlocked.
Oh.
But having said that, I'm still a 2-hour drive away.
Right. Like,
England is so small, you could still get there.
Right.
I have been that way and visited that area. It's incredible.
You know,
incredible.
It's interesting you say that. I lived in the very middle of the Lower Peninsula of Michigan for a lot of my life, and it's kind of the same thing. You could drive to both, it'd take you 2 hours to get to each side. I wonder if Michigan is fairly similar to kind of Great Britain and kind of that. I mean, obviously, Great Britain has water on all sides. Michigan has water on
we do
three sides.
I think if we were a state, we would be, I think, somewhere in the bottom third in terms of geographical size. We're very, very small. Yeah.
U.S. is kind of big.
Dunkirk is great. It really is. And that is one my opinion on has increased over the time since I saw it the first time. So yeah, good call.
Aaron, you and I, we weren't really fans of the movie whenever it first came out, whenever we first did our review.
I remember really respecting it, but not have been drawn in by it. And I think there's something to be said for clarity that Nolan doesn't care. I shouldn't say he doesn't care about it.
No, he doesn't care.
He doesn't prioritize it. I think he sees film as eternal, which it is, eternal in the way that I mean it, meaning long lasting. Sure. In that it doesn't matter if you get it the first time, doesn't matter if you get it the second time, doesn't matter if you get it the third time. If you watch it enough, you know, you'll understand it. So he doesn't prioritize first watch clarity, and Dunkirk suffers from that, I think, in a lot of ways.
Agreed. Yeah.
So yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Number one, hey, Andrew.
And I want Tom Hardy's plane that doesn't need petrol to fly. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I don't care for that silent strafing across the screen.
So good.
No engine. Mm-hmm. Worth it.
Yeah.
Worth so all good. Of the science breaking.
So good.
Did you notice I always said petrol?
That's right. You did. That's right.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. It was actually running on diesel.
Andrew.
Some corn power. Yep. I'm going to go with Jaws.
Yeah.
What else could be said about this movie? It's one of the most famous movies of all time. It's a classic. This movie is what I consider tied to be the most terrifying movie ever made, tied with John Carpenter's The Thing. And it's really predicated on the fact that sharks are my number one fear. My second fear is the ocean in general. So
oh, no.
Everything
oh, no.
about this movie is like aimed
Why do you
right
like
at
this
me.
Film?
To, yeah. I love this film because I think that the chemistry between our three leads is just so amazing.
How, it is incredible, yeah.
How, you know, different they all are. And they're working on this tiny, tiny boat. My big con with the movie is why did they go out on that instead of his big nautical boat that he had, you know, his like a scientific boat that he brought initially. I'm like, go get the shark in that one, you know? But no, the Amity Island, man, it's where colorful jacket-wearing mayors don't care about their population as much as they do about return summer investments.
Like, I would love it if that was fiction, though, but I just don't feel like it is. I think he's the most realistic character in the entire movie. He would keep that beach open.
Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's
eyes. So good.
It is. It's,
and,
it's
oh, and, yeah, incredible. He's telling the story of how he was on the Indianapolis, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
That sank, which is a true story, by the way, in case some people out there don't know. The USS Indianapolis was shot or hit with a torpedo, and I think 2,000 people went into the water, and I think 300 or something like that came out because the rest were eaten by sharks.
Yeah.
It's a horrifying story that was portrayed in a not-so-great Nicolas Cage movie called USS Indianapolis.
Oh, well, there you go. There
yeah. You go. But Jaws, on the other hand, that's number one.
That is completely true story.
I'm tired and I want to go to bed.
I think we have to say Castaway since it was on all three of our lists and you two had it really high up.
I'm that's, cool with that.
Surprising, but yeah, I think Castaway is kind of our pick together. Honorable mentions. Who would like to go first?
I only have one.
Well, then go ahead. Shout it out.
I have Scorsese's The Beach.
Yeah, sure.
I like this movie. I don't. It's probably his least loved movie out of every one that he's done. I think it's interesting. You know, it went in a way where I thought it was going to be whenever I first saw it, and I didn't really know who Scorsese was. Like, you know, when I was a young mm-hmm. lad, I just thought it was going to be, you know, like, oh, some young teens go to a secret beach and then, you know, they have great sexy time for, you know, 2 hours. But then this movie turns, I guess, is the best way to say it. And it gets really weird and pretty dark, but really good, man. DiCaprio, I think the guy knows how to act.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I might set my watch and warrant on that he knows how to act.
Yeah.
I don't know. He hasn't won enough Oscars for me to prove
that.
That's
true. That's true. Got to have the trophies. Ian, what about you? Any honorable mentions you wanted to throw out there?
Yeah, you got most of mine, so I'm going to focus on two English films. Mr. Bean's Holiday. Mm. Not a good movie. Not a good movie, but I love it because I will watch Rowan Atkinson. Yeah, I'll watch Rowan Atkinson do whatever. And this was the first time I got to see a Mr. Bean film as an adult. So it was, yeah, I can go and choose to watch this. So that was great. And a film that nobody outside of England will have heard of called Kevin and Perry Go Large. Now, this is definitely an R-rated 18 film. It's a spin-off from a sketch show that was big in the early 90s. Not going to be to everyone's taste, but it's a guilty pleasure and it's hilarious. And a large chunk of it takes place on the beach. And anybody listening that has heard it is immediately judging me. Again, bad film, but really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
I just thought of one more before Aaron goes, because you mentioned Rowan Atkinson. And for those of you who don't know, the Olympics are going on right now. Last time the Olympics were going on, it was in London, and Rowan Atkinson had a pretty amazing bit for the opening set of
so
the...
So good.
Yes. Yeah. Where he was playing Chariots of Fire, which is on a beach.
Yes, it is.
So I'll throw out Chariots of Fire. Pull. That's a good movie.
Nice.
There you go.
No, I'm giving Ian credit for that one. You get half
I'll
partial
take it.
Credit. Yeah.
What nice. An amazing
I get the Oscar.
Amazing thought process that got you there. Planet of the Apes has a prominent beach scene.
Oh gosh, man. I didn't
important.
Think of that.
Dr. No. A lot of beach in Dr. No. Which I've kind of been working my way through the Bond stuff. I think that's the first, right? That's the very first Bond.
That's number one. Who. The first of this canon.
Yeah.
Talented
Mr. Ripley probably has enough beach moments in it to warrant.
It's an underappreciated movie.
Yeah. Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar is a recent beach movie. A lot of fun.
I love that movie. I was, whenever we first did a review for that movie, I was kind of teetering. I said, this is either one of the funniest movies ever made or one of the dumbest movies ever made. I'm landing on
both?
Funny. I love this movie now. I really
yeah.
do.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Blake Lively, The Shallows. Speaking of a shark movie,
yes.
I think that movie's really fun. And then I also wanted to mention 50 First Dates. The Sandler movie is fun as well. So big sigh for me. Big sigh.
Are you going to rump not. That one, Ian?
I am rumping it as hard as I can rump a film.
Nice.
I'm pretty tired after forgetting Sarah Marshall.
All right, let's move on to our buried treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Ian, you are the guest, so you go last. Andrew, why don't you go first?
I can't tell you guys how excited I am for my buried treasure.
Oh.
So this week, this past week, the new Bruce Willis movie came out on Netflix called Cosmic Sin. Gentlemen, this is the worst movie ever made.
Oh no, and you're recommending it.
Do you not understand what a historical moment this is?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The worst movie ever made was just released.
What is it called?
Cosmic Sin. It stars Bruce Willis, Frank Grillo, and a couple others. It's a I can't even describe what the movie's about because the movie makes that little sense.
Okay.
What I thought was initially going to be alien zombies, it turned out to not be that kind of that. Everything about this movie is... And this is not one of those movies where it's like so bad that it's good. It's not like The Room or anything like that. This is a straight-up horrible, horrible movie. It's not a meta bad movie. They tried to make a good movie, and Phil says that Cosmic Sin has a 3 on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's what I was just chuckling at. 3%. Yeah. That's rough.
Yeah. Mm. I'll have to look at what it says, what it has on IMDb, but it's everything about this movie is 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5. That's really rough.
The acting is horrible. The dialogue is horrible. The dialogue in this movie is a combination of it takes place in the future, like I think 2500 or whatever, something like that. They make everything like futuristic by throwing the word quantum. in front of it.
Ugh.
No, and I'm not saying like quantum in general. Literally, the word quantum. That's the only future like sciencey word that they have. They have quantum suits. They have quantum drives. They have quantum portals. They have quantum eggnog machines. They have quantum. Everything is quantum. And the rest of the dialogue is super cringy retorts to something somebody else had just said. The graphics are horrible. The editing is horrible. The cinematography, everything about this movie is so bad. But you have to watch it because it's the worst movie ever made. there have been bad movies. There have been really bad movies. There's been First Cow. There's been many movies. See what I did there? No, I wouldn't even put First Cow in that. But there's been so many bad movies. This is a movie that Aaron, you would go, you know what? Last Airbender wasn't that bad.
No.
I'm dead serious. There was a movie that came out in the 90s called The Avengers. It's not the one that everybody's
No, I know that movie. I've seen that movie.
It's a movie with Sean Connery.
English show, isn't it?
Yeah.
With Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman, and Sean Connery. For me, that used to be the worst movie ever made. I am so excited that there is a new worst movie ever made. I'm generally excited about this because as I was watching the movie, at first I'm like, this movie's not good. Oh, this movie's horrible. Are they going to make the worst movie ever made? And then it slowly progressed to the end to where I'm like rooting, like, come on, you guys can stick the landing. You can do it. You can make the worst movie.
You mean
me in the last half hour.
Yeah. Don't do a good twist at the end. You can do it. You can get
guys. You can fumble this landing. If you just fumble this landing, you'll be the worst movie ever made.
I know. I'm generally just as excited as I would be if the greatest movie of all time had come out. Like, it's the opposite end of that spectrum. Like, oh my goodness, I've just watched history. This is the worst movie ever made.
It's amazing.
You have to admit you kind of want to watch it now, don't you?
I'm gonna.
Because you're curious about what is the worst movie ever made.
You've sold me.
Yeah.
What if I come back next week and I'm like, that wasn't that bad?
Then you would be how I felt whenever we watched The Last Jedi. Phil said a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes, and Ian, you said a 2.5 on IMDb.
2.5 on IMDb, yeah. I know rankings don't, whatever, but still, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
Try and top that, guys. Worst movie of all time.
I'm not going to. I am, however.
No, I've misunderstood this entirely.
And how perfect is it that episode 300, a monumental episode, that I choose something terrible for the buried treasure?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's great.
It happens. sometimes buried treasure is a rusty fork and you don't realize how important it is until later, you know? So you never know.
Little Mermaid, got it. I was like, wait.
I don't even think that was a Little Mermaid pool. Nice. I think that was another pool.
I think that was a double. That was a double reference right there.
Very nice.
I'm going with something I actually loved. Imagine that.
That's weird.
I'm going with a new TV show on Apple TV Plus called Schmigadoon. I have had several people recommend this to me.
It's made for you.
That is what they all say. Hey, Aaron, did you know there's a TV show that was made for you on Apple TV Plus? Yeah. I was like, no, I did not know that. So I finally got around to watching the first three episodes. There are three episodes out. I believe there are going to be six. I could be wrong about that. They're about a half hour long. So this is one of those nice, easy watches. Everybody who told me this was something for me, congratulations, you know me. This is so made for me. It is both a fun, clever, funny, modern musical, and also a complete meta takedown of musicals from the 40s and 50s. It manages to be both things and be both things very well. It has very, very talented people in it. Keegan-Michael Key Cecily Strong, I believe is her name. Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah.
Cecily Strong are your leads. They are great together. And then you've got the townsfolk or whatever that are, you know, in the musical part of things. And you've got a lot of super talented people in that. Just to clarify the plot, Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong find themselves trapped in a 40s-style musical as they're working on their very modern marriage. And so whoever is writing this and doing this definitely understands Oklahoma and Singing in the Rain. And, you know, like they get all of these tropes.
It's written by Ken Dario. He's the creator. You may know him from such amazing works as Bubble Boy, Horton Hears a Who, and The Lorax.
Listen, Horton Hears a Who and Lorax aren't bad movies. Like those, you know, there's some real fun in those.
He also wrote Despicable Me. Okay.
So
yeah, he's done stuff.
High recommend for me. I think if nothing else, you'll laugh a lot. What's amazing is I think it somehow will appeal to both people who love musicals and people who hate musicals. I think somehow they have threaded that needle really well. And so I cannot recommend it more. It is on Apple TV Plus. It is called Schmigadoon, which I believe is a reference to Brigadoon, which is a Gene Kelly musical. Brigadoon Schmigadoon, I'm guessing is where
it comes from. Isn't Alan Cumming like the mayor or something? Yes. Yeah. Like, I love that they actually get actual Broadway people to be in this show for the musical and stuff.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Kristen Chenoweth.
Chenoweth is like, in this too.
I mean, come on. Lots of great talent here doing some pretty fun stuff.
Fred Armisen.
So, yeah, Schmigadoon is, again, on Apple TV Plus.
Also, Ted Lasso Season 2 just started.
Ted Lasso Season 2 just dropped. Love me some Ted Lasso. Ian, what do you have for your buried treasure?
Since I misunderstood, I'm actually going to go with The Chronicles of Riddick, which is what I believe to be the worst movie ever made. I get a slightly twisted sense of what a buried treasure might be being in England, because it might be that I'm talking about something that, everyone watches that. But for me, this week, it's The Good Doctor, which is a TV show that is probably huge in America. It's not very huge over here. But I want to talk about it because I flipping love this show. I have a tangential experience with autism, and this is so respectful and fascinating to how it treats the condition, how it treats the people, how it treats the people in Sean's life, how he navigates just the things that we take for granted. And then there's the whole other stories. It's not just a show about that. It's a show about his mentor and how he's working through possibly losing him. It spends just as much time on the side characters who are, it's kind of Scrubs-ish. They're new doctors that are finding their place in the hospital. Same creators, same David Shaw, the same chap that made House, which is what turned me onto it, because I just finished a rewatch of House, which is my favorite TV show of all time that doesn't involve the Starship Enterprise.
you and I, Enterprise in there. Both of us, House is both of our favorite show.
Oh, let's do it. We need a side podcast now, just talking about House.
I'll do it. Don't tempt me.
Let's do it. I love House so much, and this is just in so many ways identical and the antithesis to House as well. The stuff that Sean Murphy says could easily come out of House's mouth, but for completely different reasons. Where House is saying it deliberately, out of spite or whatever, Sean is saying it out of just pure innocence and ignorance to how he should be saying things. I love it. If for some reason you haven't watched it, watch it. There's obviously medical things and surgery in it, so if that's a trigger for you, don't. It's a great show. Brilliant.
Yeah. Aaron knows that whenever that show is running, that it's my favorite show that is on TV.
Yep.
I've championed it many and many a time.
Yeah, it's great.
And I'm glad that it's made its way overseas now.
Yep, I bet. Fortunate enough
to get it on Amazon, I think. I think we got it on Amazon.
I bet I would enjoy this show. I don't ever plan on watching it. I'm so burnt out on medical shows. House was really the last one that that I watched, and I'm not ready yet. Maybe down the line, maybe mm-hmm. when it finishes its run, maybe I'll do a run on it. But yeah, I've heard nothing but good things. So
yeah, I'm very similar. I was burnt out after House, and I was like, but I wanted more House, and this is as close to more seasons of House as we can get. Yeah. So I think if you're going to jump back in, highly recommend you do it with The Good Doctor.
Very nice. So that is Cosmic Sin on Netflix, Schmigadoon on Apple TV Plus, and The Good Doctor, which I believe has all four seasons available on Hulu here stateside. We did it, guys. We did 300 main episodes of this podcast. Congratulations to us all. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching for Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show. Thank you to Drew for graphics.
Woo!
And thank you to Ian for hanging out with us for show 300. Ian, do you have anything you want to promote? Anywhere you want to send people?
Yeah, I have I think I said this last time, I've got a movie podcast called An Englishman and an Irishman Go to the Movies. The very first thing we ever did was a deep dive on Christopher Nolan. So if you want to hear me gush about Dunkirk and Inception, that's the place to do it. Those episodes are a bit rusty because we were still finding a groove, but that's probably my favourite conversation that we've had on the show. I absolutely loved it. And other than that, you can find me on Twitter at galactic_Dave.
An Englishman and an Irishman Go to the Movies, again, is the name of the podcast if you want to check that out.
Danae says, congrats on 300. Well, Danae, we couldn't have done it without you.
That's right. Thanks for hanging out with us.
I hope you weren't here for Jules.
That's true. Thank you to our Sif Pop members as well for making 300 episodes possible. We couldn't have done them without you either. And if you're interested in finding out what it means to be a Sif Pop member, starts at $3 a month, and at the different levels, there's different perks, including an ad-free podcast with all the main episodes and the bonus episodes and the spoiler episodes with no ads involved. So you can check that out at patreon.com/sifpop. If you want to interact with us, you can do that in a few ways. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, or you can email us at feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like it too, so let them know about it and that listening is much easier than cutting a self-healing umbilical cord. We will be back next week with Jungle Cruise. We'll be back with Jungle Cruise next week, and we'll see you then.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.